Good morning. Happy Easter to you. Happy Resurrection Sunday. It is so good to see you here this morning. I'm Norm Byers. It's my pleasure to be here with you on this glorious day. And thank you for coming. Thank you for watching if you're watching in. I want you to think about something. For 2,000 years, people have celebrated the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Wow, that's just, it's mind-boggling to me to think about. For 2,000 years, people have celebrated, worshiped Jesus over His resurrection from the dead. From the very beginning, Christians believed, the very beginning, that Jesus actually died. He wasn't in a coma. He wasn't hurt real bad and got nursed back to health. He died. He flatlined. And then they buried Him. They put Him in the tomb. And they rolled the rock in front of it. He was dead. And then He rose again. And then He appeared. He showed up. He appeared to Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, like Scott read just a few moments ago. He appeared to the disciples. He appeared to Peter. And the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 that He appeared to more than 500 people. It's an incredible legacy that we have as followers of Christ. And you know, I saw a report this week that 80% of Americans, this is 2,000 years later, 80% of Americans, in one way or another, are celebrating Easter. 80%, that's a big number. Now, in that, that's like 260 million people, by the way, if you can do the math on that real fast. Now, think about this. There are different groups of people in that big number. And maybe you're one of these, okay? So there's the traditionalists. I'm going to give you three. Traditionalists, okay? There are the minimalists, or the nominalists, excuse me. I'm speaking a different sermon from 3 years ago. What happened? No. There's the nominalist. There's, first of all, what was the first one, you remember? Traditionalist, the nominalist, and the enthusiasts. They're all in the room today. Okay, the traditionalists, they believe that Easter, it's a custom. It's something that you do once a year. You know, once a year you get the Easter baskets out, you do the egg hunt thing, and yeah, that's the Sunday when you go to church. It's Easter. Okay? And then there's the nominalists, okay? And by the way, I got a quick question, though, before I move on to that. Is it Peeps or is it Reese's Eggs? Okay? Which one is it? All right. That's a big question, right? And it, to me, it's like, where's the peanut butter? That's the answer to that question. But anyway, so you got the nominalists, and the nominalists, they're Christians. They would say that they're Christians, but Easter is just like any other Sunday. It's like, if nothing is better going on, then I'll be at church. But if there's a better opportunity, then I'm going to be there. And then you have the enthusiasts. They're excited. They're passionate. And this isn't just, you know, I want to say this very clearly, okay? Some people are more emotionally expressive, and some people are more maybe, you know, they demonstrate what they believe in different ways, and all those ways should be embraced. There's nothing wrong with each one. But some people are very enthusiastic outwardly. Some people are just very enthusiastic inside because they know they've been risen. They've experienced the freedom of Christ. But here's the point on that group of people. The resurrection is personal. It's something that connects to them as an entity, as a person. Today, my question for you is, what is Easter to you? Is it just a tradition? Is it something, hey, it's Easter Sunday. It's time to go to church. It's time to get the Easter baskets out. Is it just kind of a nominal thing? Like, yeah, no, yeah, I'll be in church most likely. It's just a normal Sunday? Or is it personal? Is it something that's connected to your personal life? The resurrection of Jesus from the dead. Does it connect to your private life? Does it have application in your daily life? Like that power of the resurrection to live Which is it for you? I want you to think about that today. I want to invite you to make the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead personal. Today I want to invite you to make it personal. Not just some concept, not just some idea out there, but yours. Yours. That's what I'm going to encourage you to do today. And so I'm going to give you three steps in which that can make that possible. Three steps to take, okay? Okay, the first one has to do with this, okay? The first thing that you got to do is you have to settle one thing. You have to settle one thing. We're going to talk about that. And then, secondly, you have to let go of something. You settle one thing. You got to let go of something. And then the last one is this. You have to embrace. You got to receive someone. Everybody do that with me. As you elbow your neighbor. That was a Christian thing to do on Easter. You have to embrace someone. So that's what we're going to look at here today. Okay, so settle one thing. By the way, this is a judge's gavel. Doesn't it look like it? Come on, you got to pretend a little bit here this morning. You got to use your imagination. This is a judge's gavel. And what does it stand for? It stands for decision making. You need to make a decision. You need to make a final decision, okay? A matter needs to be settled once and for all. And here it is. Do you believe that Jesus Christ literally rose from the dead? You don't have to answer that overtly. I just want to know in your heart, do you believe it? There's no other way to make the resurrection personal. You can't get there another way. It goes directly through this one. Do you believe it? Do you believe literally Jesus was dead and he rose from the grave? The Apostle Paul, he points this out in 1 Corinthians 15 that this is the central issue in Christianity. Okay, this is what he says in verse 14 of chapter 15 of 1 Corinthians. And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. He's just basically saying, if it isn't true, if Jesus hasn't risen from the dead, this is a big waste of time. Sunday morning here, all the people that came first, all the people here, this is a big waste of time. And actually, Paul says, if it's not true, we're to be pitied more than anyone. We're wasting our time. We're wasting people's time. And it means nothing. But Paul goes on to say, it is true. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is true. Now, I know some of you, for some of you, and that your intellectual faculties are challenged by the thought of something supernatural. You're an empiricist. You want to see, like, that happened, therefore I believe it. I saw it with my eyes, I touched it, you know, which is really compelling when you go back to the accounts of the disciples. 1 John chapter 1, go ahead and read that. He says, we have touched it, we have seen the risen life. But for you, you haven't, and so it's a challenge to you, it's difficult. And my heart goes out to you, because I think kind of the same way. You know, you hear a lot of stuff on social media, right? You hear a lot of stuff on the news, and it's like, sorry, I'm not believing that unless I see it. You know what I'm saying? Anybody ever think that, or am I the only one here? And so you may have that, and it's a miracle what happened. And a miracle is an extremely rare event outside of the natural laws. By very definition, what happened 2,000 years ago is a miracle. Miracles do not happen all the time. They're extremely rare when God works outside of the natural laws. Okay? And so you may wrestle with that. Is it possible? Well, if you believe in a creator, if you believe all this that we have today is the result of a creator, then it's certainly possible that the one who created this governs all of the natural laws. Now, I'm acquainted with Christians who, when this question is asked, do you believe in the literal resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead? I'm familiar with people who hem-haw around that question. They'll say, well, you know, I'm not sure if you should take that literally. I'm not sure if it's meant to be taken literally. Stuff like that. And that's a cop-out. That's not being honest with what the text says, what the reportage says from the Bible. And I just want to say this, that next week we're going to do Q&A here during our gatherings next week. So if you want to come back next week and hear some questions, Scott and I are going to be up here kind of addressing questions that have come in, hard questions. And maybe you have one. You can text it to Genesis or hit that number there and we'll have it. And we'll be able to think about it for a week if you're nice enough to give it to us ahead of time. This is a big question. Is it literal? Now, New Testament scholar Paula Fredrickson. And by the way, if you want the notes, just text Genesis and I've got some of the citing of this material that I'm sharing. New Testament scholar Paula Fredrickson, she's not a Christian, a number of years ago made a comment on the post-resurrection appearances of Jesus. This is what Fredrickson said. I know in their own terms, talking about the disciples, I know in their own terms what they saw was the raised Jesus. That's what they say. And then all the historic evidence we have afterwards attests to their conviction that that's what they saw. I'm not saying they really did see the raised Jesus. I wasn't there. I don't know what they saw, but I do know that as a historian that they must have seen something. You know, think about this. After the most traumatic experience in the lives of these disciples, the most traumatic thing that they'd ever experienced, their rabbi, okay, was arrested, was charged with crimes, was beaten up really bad, and then was strung up, crucified, capital punishment in the Roman world, and he died. He died on the cross. I mean, it was the most traumatic experience of their lives. I just want you to imagine someone that you respect a lot morally. Someone, it may be a father, it may be a mother, it may be a grandpa or grandma or a good friend. It might be a pastor. I mean, who knows? It could be. You really look up to them and they get arrested and their charges are brought against them, heinous charges. And then they go through a process and they are condemned to death, to die by lethal injection. I mean, wouldn't it devastate you? I mean, even if the charges were false, it would be devastating. And what happened? The disciples saw that and they ran away. They denied Christ. They turned tail. But something happened. Something happened that has to be accounted for. Because they came back with a renewed energy. They came back with an incredible tolerance for suffering. And humanly, you know, no reward, no human reward. Fearlessly, you know, they proclaimed Jesus Christ as Lord. Not Caesar as Lord. Jesus Christ as Lord. They fearlessly proclaimed Jesus as raised from the dead. They fearlessly proclaimed Jesus as the way to eternal life. Not one of those disciples got a book deal. Not one. Not one. Not one got the proceeds from one anyway. Not one had a million Twitter followers. Not one. None of them got fame. None of them got fortune. You know what each of them got? They got, like, you talk about getting a lump of coal in your stocking. They got martyrdom. They got killed. That's what they got for what they believed in. You see, something happened. It doesn't make any sense otherwise. You got to make a judgment on this. Something happened. You know, there are awkward theories out there about what happened. But what makes the most sense is that these disciples, these followers of Jesus, both men and women, by the way, they encountered the living, the risen Jesus Christ. That's what makes the most sense. You know, sometimes the Creator works outside of the natural law to achieve His purposes. He can do that. He's God. It's estimated in the world, I don't know if you know this, but it's estimated there's 2.38 billion Christians worldwide. Did you know that? That's a big number. I have a hard time grappling with that. You know, millions are hard for me, even thousands. Brenda will tell you hundreds are. You know, like, wow, billion, that's 2.38 billion people that, like you, has resurrection on their mind today. That's humbling to me. I mean, look what we're a part of, man. This is way better than Amway, I'm telling you. 2.38 billion people. You see, something happened. That just doesn't happen. Jesus rose from the dead, and we see the results of his mighty act. You know, when a judge is up, you know, in his, what do you call it, where he sits? On his throne. I'm starting to draw a blank here. Anyway, he's up there getting ready to make a judgment. He, a lot of times, doesn't have all the intricate data and information. He doesn't always. He sort of has to go with what he has. We don't have everything. We don't know everything. But we got to make a judgment on this. And it does take faith. And I just want to say, if you choose that today, if you choose to say, yep, I'm a believer. I believe Jesus Christ literally rose from the dead. If you believe that today, I want to tell you, it's going to open up a whole world of possibilities for you and for your family. So you gotta decide one thing. All right, so let's go on to the next one. You got to let go of something. You got to let go of something. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story. A few years ago, Brent and I were selling a house. And it's a house that we had since we had been here. And about 5 years ago, we decided to sell it. And so we had moved out, moved into a different house, and we were getting ready to show it. So I went over, did kind of the walkthrough thing, you know, make sure it was ready to go. And I was walking through the basement. I was kind of in a hurry. I'm always in a hurry. You know, I was in a hurry. I was like, I got to get through this. And I look up, and on one of those ceiling tiles, you know, I could see a little water ring, just a tiny one. If anybody has ceiling, anybody got ceiling tiles in their house? When a drip of water gets on it, you know it right away. It's like, rah, 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 drip of water. So I got panels. I got some extra ones up in the attic so I can switch it out. But I wonder where it's coming from. And, oh, it's in the master bedroom. Master bathroom. So I went up there and, you know, I'm like, the thought occurred to me, I shouldn't do this. I should call somebody. You know, I shouldn't do this. And then when I got in there, I realized, you know, there's no water shutoff in here. Ah, it'll be all right. So I get in there and I notice that the pipe is sticking up here and there's a compression fitting on it. And it's the hot water line, by the way. And I could see one solitary drop on the compression fitting. And I'm like, this is easy. I can do this. I'm no dummy. I got this. So I went and I got my channel locks. And I went and I got the crescent wrench that I had there. And I went in there and I got down there. And by the way, I wasn't showing anything in the back. I got in there. And I got those wrenches on there, and I was just getting ready. I just put a little bit of pressure, and it exploded. And I'm like, what in the world? That compression fitting was cracked. And the minute that I put pressure on it, it just exploded. And the water was just billowing out. So what did I do? I put my thumb on it, like this. And the water is like this. And did I tell you it was the hot water? And did I tell you there was no shut off? And I honestly, I was there and I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And there was nothing I could do. It was the most hopeless feeling I've ever had in my life. I couldn't yell for anybody because no one was there. The neighbors didn't like me. No, just kidding. I don't think it was that. They just weren't home. I mean, am I going to just wait this out for several days? I didn't know, honestly, I can't tell you. I was starting to hyperventilate because I'm like, oh my goodness. And the people are coming, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I'm holding this and it's getting hotter. And my thumb was getting, because it was like cut. And my thumb was getting cut. It was starting to bleed a little bit. And I'm like, what am I going to do? 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 You know, Mary Magdalene and Mary they go to the tomb. I just, if you've ever lost someone, a friend, you know the pain. When I was in seventh grade, my best friend got killed in a plane crash. And I thought about that this week, and it was still real to me. You know, that was a long time ago, by the way. You know, so they're going to the, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, they're going to the tomb. This is their friend. This is their best friend. This is someone they care about, and he's killed and he's dead, and they're anguishing. And they're it's out of their control. They're trying to do something. They're gonna make sure the burial's proper. So they've got their aloes and spices and they go there. And then to their shock, the stone is rolled away. This is not a good thing. They are shocked. They're like, what is going on? And they're anguished. They're deeply anguished. You know, and then we all know what happens. The angel appears, and the angel says, he's not here. The one who was crucified, Jesus, the angel says, he has risen. And then what did he say? Just as he said. He is risen just as he says. They swim moved that. They didn't even hear it. We know that from the other accounts. You look at the other accounts. They didn't really hear that, but they let go. It says this. Look at this. These verses will be up on the screen. This is after the angel said this. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid. They were letting go. They were letting go of control. They let go, filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. And verse 9, it says, as Jesus met them, and he says, greetings. It sounds like Star Wars. Yeah, Star Wars. Like, greetings, Yoda. But greetings, he said. And Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, they came to him, and they clasped his feet. They grabbed onto him and they worshiped him. They let go of what they were holding on and they grabbed onto the solution. They grabbed on the worship of Christ. And when you're able to let go of what you're holding on to, you're going to be afraid. I'm telling you, when I was in that bathroom, that water, and I realized I got to let go of this, I was afraid. Whatever you're holding on to, you got to let go of. There's a guy, his name is Alan Noble. He wrote a book, recent one. Johnny, actually, Whitcomb was telling me about it, so I picked it up. You're Not Your Own. Great. It's, you know, anyway, I'm going to keep with this. He says in his book here, he says, as a society, we have a flawed anthropology. Okay? An anthropology, of course, is the study of people with a focus on understanding the human condition. So he's saying that in our society, our way of understanding humanity and our way of understanding the human condition is flawed. That's what he's saying. So he gives a critique to our society, and that's what this is. Let me read it. No one can choose our journey, give us a purpose, define our identity, choose our values, or determine where we belong. In a modern society, all these choices are ours to make. While it may seem this gives us freedom to define our own identity, meaning, and value, but in reality, it leaves us exhausted, discontented, and ultimately less than human. In essence, the freedom that we and our society strive for is not really freedom. We're trying to control something, but it's controlling us. And what the message of the Bible is, we need to let go of our perceived control and grab onto the true freedom, which is found in Jesus Christ. We got to let go. We got to let go of what we're holding on to. And we got to entrust. That doesn't mean we don't try in life. We just have to let go of it. We have to take the psychological ownership over things that are beyond our control. And we have to submit them. We have to surrender them to Jesus Christ. Some of you, you've been a Christian a long time. And you're here today and it's Resurrection Sunday. And you're trying to get into the mood of it. And you're holding on to something that today, maybe on Resurrection Sunday, you let go of. You entrust to the one who is able to hold it. Jesus said one time, Matthew chapter 10, verse 39, if you cling to your life, you know, if you hold on to it, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it. Okay. Got to make a decision. Got to settle a matter. Got to settle one matter. And then you got to let go of something. If you want to encounter the resurrection in a personal way, you got to let go of something. And then lastly, you got to receive somebody. Let's do it again. Receive. Okay? We're receiving. Okay? Now here, the validity of the resurrection is built on the personal credibility of Jesus Christ. I believe that with every ounce of my being, and I think you should as well. The validity, if it's valid, it rests on the credibility of Jesus Christ. You ever heard what C.S. Lewis said? There's a trilemma. Either Jesus is what? Number one, anybody know this? He's either a liar, or number two, what's number two? He's crazy. He's a lunatic. Or the third L is what? He's what? He is Lord. Liar, lunatic, or Lord. There's no in between. There's no patronizing Christ. Well, you know, he was just a great teacher, a moral guy, but no. Because look at here. Let me just say this. That, you know, in my way of thinking, like if somebody tells you they're going to do something, they should do it. You know what I'm saying? It's just a part of the way I was brought up, the way it was impressed upon me that if I say something, I do it. And that is linked to my integrity. It's linked to my character, my reputation. And so I've tried to do that. I don't do it perfectly. I'm not trying to say that. I've tried to raise my kids and our family. You know, Brent and I agree on that hey, you say something, even though it's hard, you should do it. Have you ever met someone that they say they're going to do something and they never do it? Anybody? Raise your hand if you ever. No elbowing. Okay? Like, they're going to come over Saturday and help you shingle your roof and they never show. You know, or hey, yeah, I'll meet you for coffee. And oh, you know, I just forgot. I got tied up with work. You know, they just. And so they tell you something and what do you do? They're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then what do you do? The eyes roll, right? They're not going to do it. But then there's those people where when they say something, they do it. You know what I'm talking about? Like they say, yeah, I'm going to be at your game. I'm going to watch you play baseball. Or I'm going to show up and have coffee. I'm going to help you shingle your roof. And you know they're going to be there. The person says, I'll be at your house Saturday at 3 p.m. to chat. You're like, they're going to be there. And so something happens and you can't make it. You're like, you contact them because you know they'll show up and you won't be there. Because that's Jesus. What he says, he does. Is there anybody like that in your life? To that degree. Jesus said different times, three different times in the Synoptic Gospels, that he would suffer, be killed, and on the third day rise again. Matthew 16:21 is the first example. He said he would suffer from the elders and the chief priests, be killed, and on the third day rise again. That's just one example. How could he pull that off? Because Jesus is the Son of God. He's God. And we've been studying this in our series that God is omniscient. That means he knows all things. Nothing surprises him. God isn't reacting to the things that happen in your life. He didn't react to Adam and Eve sinning in the garden. He's proactive from the foundations of the world. Christ was prepared to come. Redemption's plan was in order at creation. So my friends, when Jesus says something, he does it. His promises, we can hold on to. You can take it to heart. You can receive him. You can actually bring him in. One of the strongest statements about that is the resurrection statement in John chapter 11, verse 25, where Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me lives. Jesus is saying the resurrection is not just some concept. It's not just some like idea, some theory. You know, it's not an institution. Okay? He's saying, I am the resurrection. In a real sense, Jesus is saying, The resurrection is flesh and blood. It's someone you can trust. It's someone you can receive. God the Father wrote God the Son into the story of creation, and because of that, we can know Him. Receiving Jesus is not signing on the dotted line. It's not a shake of hands. Okay, yes, I'll take salvation. I believe, you know, this, that, and the other thing. No. It's a relationship. Jesus is not a product to be consumed, but a person to follow. Now, when I was a kid, one of the first verses I ever heard, sets of verses I ever heard as a kid. I didn't come from a Christian family. I came from a dysfunctional family, very hard family. But anyway, some people invited me to church, and I remember going to the Sunday school room and hearing this verse and seeing it on the wall. They wrote it out, and it was John chapter 14. Are you familiar with John chapter 14, verses 1 through 3? And Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he says, "Let not your hearts be troubled." I'd never had anyone say anything like that to me before that point. Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. And Jesus goes on to say, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, you can be also." I remember hearing that as a kid. No, like, I want that. I want me some of that. I want that. I want that relationship. And so, you know, in that, there's the resurrection. And in that, there's the resurrection to come. In that is eternity. In that is the hope of spending eternity with someone who cares for you. Earlier we said, you know, I pointed out that in our society, we have a flawed anthropology. You know, we need to correct our anthropology. Jesus corrects it. We must realize that we are helpless and hopeless without Him. We can't do it. We need help. Every one of us. Everyone in this room, everyone that's watching, we all need help. And each of us needs purpose and meaning from Christ. That's where freedom's at. I'm going to have the band come up right now. We're going to sing one more song to end with. And, you know, I just want to, you know, going back to that thing, you know, I'm in there and I'm like, man, this is a mess. I'm in big trouble. You know, I got to let go. I got to let go. I can't stay here all day. I got to let go. I can't control this. I got to go to the solution. I got to go to the right solution, which, by the way, was turning off the pump in the house. I'm embarrassed to say. That's some of you today. You need to let go. And you need to embrace the person of Jesus Christ. I want to invite you to stand up. We're going to sing as we go here. But if you're ready for that, I just want to pray a prayer that you can pray and you can make the resurrection personal today. Let's bow our heads. This is a prayer that you can say. Dear Lord, I believe that you rose from the dead, that it was your plan to pay for sins and to bring victory to all. I confess my need for you and your righteousness because I am sinful. I trust you and I embrace you as my leader. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.